Hey, welcome. Hello. Good evening. Well, evening for me. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Unscripted Gaming. I'm going to be one of your three hosts. I am Ray, and we got two other people here. What do we got here?
Filming. Changing it up a bit.
Yeah,
a
little.
I guess I'm two of the three hosts.
Host two of three.
My name is Baron Harkonnen.
Finally.
I will levitate to your house and make you woke in your sleep.
And I am host three of three, the Nizan al-Ghaib Muad'Dib, a.k.a. Paul.
The voice of God.
Josh al-Ghaib.
Josh al-Ghaib. Metroid so Man.
Speaking of which, I saw Dune 2. One of our friends, one of our mutuals, Ryan, he said, hey, I don't know if I want to see this movie in IMAX, because when I saw Dune 1 in IMAX, the theater just kept rumbling and shaking because of the heavy bass. I was like, yeah, don't go see this one in IMAX then, because I've ridden helicopters with less reverb. It is constant, and it's beautiful.
That's what I want for my damn movies, okay?
Yeah, that's cinema right there. Like reverb,
if I did
so
not
bad.
Be shaken to my core by the sight of God.
Yeah, if you don't think
I
you're on the set
it,
of Black Hawk cool. Down, like then what are we even doing here?
Right.
It's true. Why are we even trying this? All right. So let's talk about some video games. You know what I'm saying?
Video games. They're pretty good sometimes.
Hey, gentlemen, can I tell you about this game I've been playing? It's called Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Let's hear about it.
I'm not going to get into spoilers. I mean, it's a retelling of Final Fantasy VII, obviously. And it's a direct
sequel. But silly this time.
It is a lot silly. Well, Final Fantasy VII is a silly game. And this gets
it's pretty
sillier.
Silly.
Yeah. Like, okay, this will make Josh smile. Remember that part in the boat to Costa del Sol where Barrett has to dress up in a sailor uniform?
Yes.
They lean so damn hard into that in this game. I was smiling the entire time. There's a part where Red 13 has to dress up too. Maybe the game does something with this. I'm not telling you anything about that because that part, I was like, this is just a love letter. This game's great. The entire game is... I've been going gremlin mode playing this game. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I'm 30 hours in. I'm like halfway through the game. I've done like every single side quest the game has thrown at me. Some of the side quests are they have a new mini game that's a card-based game for you Triple Triad or Tetramaster fans out there. They got something like that, but it's a really cool card game called Queen's Blood. And Mike, for you, they do a little Twin Peaks type of thing where they're like, "Where did the game of Queen's Blood come from?" Oh, listen to you and your sanguine victories. Good luck out there. And they do a, like a cool little under thing about the game. It's neat.
Okay.
They also bring back the Fort Condor minigame in the funnest way possible. Josh, do you remember the Fort Condor minigame?
I don't think so. Like
that's a little like it's like the little what's the phone game? It's like the not Clash of Clans, like Clan Royale. Clash Royale.
Kind of, in a way. It's like a tower defense game with the little with the really bad polygon things.
That's one of those I'd probably remember it if I see it, I'll be like, oh yeah, that thing, but like it's not clicking in my mind right now.
I'd have to show it to you. They do bring that back in a really, really fun way. The biggest complaint that I've been seeing online for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth is they're like, there's so many minigames and side quests. And I'm like, yeah, it's great. Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, that's also, like, people don't remember, like, once you got into the open world, once you got out of Midgar, like, you spent a lot of time wandering around doing really silly shit for a long time, and then serious shit started happening again. But, like, the middle section of that game is very, like, well, let's just putz around and, like, see what happens.
Yeah, I feel like the collection of Final Fantasy VII stuff that came out afterwards, after like, you know, it started with the movie Advent Children. Everyone started thinking that it was like a serious brooding series. It's like, no, Cloud is a goofball. He jokes, he cracks wise. Aerith is just as wise cracking as well. Like, she doesn't take any crap. Same with Tifa. And Barret is just the most correct person there.
Barret is so cool.
He's always right. He says he read the book How to Blow Up a Pipeline and took that literally.
You guys, sidebar, they made the movie of that was actually like really good. You should watch it. Check it out.
I might. We did read the book for book club.
The movie's really good.
I got to a part where they introduced a new character. I'm not saying who. It's pretty obvious if you think about it or if you played the game before. But the way they introduced this character is fun and cool. The whole experience, I was playing this like, okay, Final Fantasy VII Remake is one of my favorite games of all time now, having played it, because it takes this little concept of the game and it spins it on its head and says, we know exactly what you're expecting and we're just gonna and do something completely different with it. And it tells a fun meta story. This one does something different. It just, and this is without revealing anything, it just leans hard into, we're taking what you remember from that game and we're just making it all bigger and better. And we're telling a grander story. We're gonna warp it so that you're gonna think that the people that are bad guys, like, what if they have an ulterior motive and they're not as bad as you think? Certain things like that. Or, like, what if certain things that you've done have, like, consequences? I'll tell you this. Final Fantasy VII Remake, they showed the consequences of the Sector 5 bombing run. Remember, since you both played it, and, you know, it's a four-year-old game at this point, Jesse's father, you go visit her house, and her father is in the bed, like, he's laid up and really hurt, potentially dying, because you blew up that reactor, and it really hurt him, and it hurt their job prospects, and they don't know what they're going to do. And you're sneaking outside their house, visiting as, like, the Avalanche crew are just eating pizza, because that's what they could make at that time. And you're like, oh, my actions have dire consequences to some of these innocent people. That's kind of cool. They went there.
It's interesting to me because I also was talking to a friend of mine who is going back, and he is playing basically trying to get through all of the Final Fantasy games as an adult for the first time. He's only played, like, one recent one. So it's interesting to hear his perspective on, you know, these games looking back 20-plus years later. And I do wonder if the way that they are retelling and reimagining some of these stories, like, is this something that didn't happen just because the limitations of the hardware and, like, the time that they had to tell the story, or, you know, they had it in the back of their mind, or is it just, like, storytelling wasn't at a place where you could do the nuance of, hey, corporations are bad, but also sometimes the things that you do to take down the corporations have impact on people who have absolutely nothing to do with it. But I do think...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, it is nice to hear that they are, whether or not it's because they have taken the time to give themselves multiple games, if it's because storytelling has evolved, if the hardware just allows them to go a little more deep and nuanced in it, but to show everything is not just black and white, because nothing is. Like, yes, obviously the corporations are bad and the things that are happening to the planet are awful, but, like, sometimes the things you have to do to stop them do have impacts on real world people who are just trying to live their lives.
There is one line in the original Final Fantasy VII where they find out Kate Sith is... Once again, this is a damn near 30-year-old game, so, you know, whatever. They find out Kate Sith is actually controlled by Reeves, who is a Shinra employee.
Yeah.
And Barret finds out and calls Reeves a traitor, and calls him a terrorist for destroying the planet. And Reeves says, I'm a terrorist. Really? How many people do you think died when you blew up both of those reactors? That's the one line they say in the original Final Fantasy VII. And here they lean, even in Rebirth a little bit, they lean a little bit harder into it. But you know, this is not giving anything away. If I was to talk about like how it looks, you have the option of playing it in 4K at 30 frames per second on the PS5 or in 1440p at 60 frames a second. I made the right choice, in my opinion. 4K gaming is a scam until we get it at 60 frames reliably, so I went to 60 frames, 1440p. It looks gorgeous.
Frame rate over all.
It's true. It's true. It looks great. It plays great. There are team attacks that you could do at any given time. They don't even cost you AT bar to use. As a matter of fact, they fill up your AT bar faster if you use the team attacks. All of the team attacks are kind of fun looking, and then there are super team attacks like Limit Break team attacks, which are really, really neat. I'll just talk about one Limit Break team attack. They're called synergy attacks with Cloud and Aerith. Is Cloud jumps into the air with his Buster Sword, Aerith shoots non-elemental magic into the sword, and he starts shooting and swinging blade beams at the enemy, and then he does a spinning
All right, I'm fucking... Again, this is not cool enough to buy a PS5 for.
Is it?
It's not. It's not $600 cool. But
okay, that's fair.
But I hope to all that is holy in this universe that the PC port comes quickly and is not bugged, because hot damn. Honestly, I would play a 720p version scaled down for the PS4, right? Like, just give me something. I don't care. Just give it to me. But I'm not buying your 8-ton black and white box because I don't need it.
I don't think it... that's another thing. The game is huge. It's huge. It's big. It is 170 gigs. Like, it's got the 90 gig data disk, and then it's got 80 gig disk. Like, okay, the game is also on here, by the way. The data disk was just all the assets we're gonna load. And
that's absurd.
Normally, I would say, I would agree with you, that's absurd. And then you see how big the open world sections of the games are, and you're like, all right, I'm picking up what you're throwing down. And there's no load times. That's another thing. Like, that's another reason why I've kind of gone a little gremlin mode with the game, because the game never stops. It just keeps going and going and going.
That is a benefit of being on the PS5 with the direct storage, of just being able to just load in very, very quickly.
I don't want to give away too much because the game just came out less than a month ago. I'm having an absolute blast with it.
How many hours have you put into it so far?
30.
Okay.
Maybe 31.
Do you have any idea, like, sense of your progress, like how far through, you know, the main storyline you are?
Oh, I'm easily halfway through. You could get to where I am right now in 20 hours, but as I said before,
yeah, you've been doing all, you're having a blast. You're doing all the side quests and whatnot.
It's the way that the open world is sectioned off. It's so smart. You unlock it. They got Ubisoft towers in the game, right? They absolutely have Ubisoft towers.
God.
But what they don't do is when you activate a tower, they don't just say, okay, here's 18,000 things all over the area. They're like, no, here's three. Here's three, maybe four things.
Little bite-sized nuggets. You could do three things.
And they put them in a line. They want you to go in the progression to do them.
See, that's easy. You can do that.
I normally hate that kind of progression where you're like, go to the tower, activate. No, they actually like set it up so it's breadcrumb that you can knock it out really quick, easy, and then they don't make you go turn quests in. They're like, no, you did this. Keep going.
Ooh,
and it's,
man,
painless.
That's dangerous. That's number one thing about like doing quests in RPGs. Is the trek back to drop the quest off. Like,
yeah.
That, you know, that's something that Starfield is, you know, a big problem with Starfield is like, oh, hey, you go and you're onto this planet, and then you need to go to this other system to do the quest, but then you need to go back to the other system to, like, hey, I did the thing. And they're like, cool beans, dude. And then sometimes they're like, can you go back and do it again, but harder? And you're like, oh.
How about I don't do any of it?
I have FTL travel. Why can't I just ping you on a fucking radio? Like, to hear that you can just like do a side quest and it's just done.
Not only that thing you just complained about, the ping you on the radio. So a character comes back and they give you a voice communicator, and because it's a PS5 version of the game, it comes in through your PS5 controller, your DualSense controller. And so they'll just talk to you through that, like, hey, great job completing the quest, keep at it. And then it's like, you're done.
That's...
You want to keep playing? Go ahead.
It all right, so remember when I said this game isn't $600 worth it? I might be revising my previous statement. This...
You're just looking at that like, maybe I could get a couple games to justify this.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, the PS5 had a lot of games come out since 2020. I haven't played any of them, so, I mean, I guess...
I told this to you in chat, but it still looks cool. One of the team-up attacks that, again, you could do at any time, it doesn't cost ATB meter, it actually builds your ATB meter, is Barrett shooting his machine gun arm over at Cloud, and he deflects each shot into the enemy. And... you could just keep doing that, and it counts as a ranged attack. So if an enemy is like far off or in the air, you just Barrett turns around, starts shooting in Cloud, just bang, 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 and it starts building up your relationship, because there's a relationship meter with all the characters too. So the more team attacks you do with the character, the more you build up the relationship. And I think that's building up because I think the Gold Saucer event is in this game. The Gold Saucer event where you go on a date with one of the characters. I love it. I'm loving this game. I absolutely effing enjoying it. I can't say anymore. I want to say, like, if you liked Final Fantasy VII Remake at all, you should play it. There's one negative I will throw out there. There has been some marketing of the game saying, like, oh yeah, you don't need to have played Final Fantasy VII Remake to enjoy this game. You should, first of all, that's a lie. Second of all, not only should you have played Remake, you should have played this, like, chapter in between called Integrate, where you play as Yuffie. I'm afraid you have to play that one, too, to kind of really understand what the hell is going on here. Otherwise, you're kind of just thrown in, like, the character's like, oh, man, that whole incident at Midgar, man, that was a thing, wasn't it? And you, as a new player, are like, no, what the hell are you talking about? There's, like, a recap movie. I didn't watch it. I'm not gonna watch it. I'm sure it's not the exact same experience at all.
Well, you know, if you didn't watch the recap, of course it's gonna feel like a drop in.
I will.
You
know, yeah. This, I do. And something about Japanese studios as well, like Kingdom Hearts was especially bad at this in its heyday. Like,
I think Kingdom Hearts is the worst about whatever you're about to say. I don't care what it is.
Yes. I understand what they're like, them being like, oh yeah, like we'll recap you, it's fine, like you don't need to see everything to like enjoy this experience. Like, honestly, sometimes that's how it should be. Like, yes, you do need to have, for some sequels you need to have a baseline piece of information, but with time from the original, like we talked about with like Alan Wake, like when you have so much time from the original, sometimes you just can't expect people to like go back and see the source material. You're always going to get that, but like when you are doing a direct sequel and you have version 1 and then you have your number 2 and you're making a jump to say, oh, you actually really need to not only have part 1 but then something that came out with the re-release of part 1 on this new console, but just adding something at the tail end that doesn't come out separately, like grinds my gears to no end.
I think, to be fair, if you have the PS4 version of Final Fantasy VII Remake and you put it on a PS5, you like download it onto a PS5, you get integrated for free.
Okay.
Like it does. That's what I did. It doesn't cost you
now. The Yuffie chapters, can you just play those standalone, or do you have to play through the game to get to them, or does it, or are they interspersed throughout the game?
It just appears.
Okay.
It says, you prove that you own a copy of Final Fantasy VII Remake, whether it's the PS5 or the PS4 version, and then you go to the PlayStation Store, and they're like, you get Integrate the Yuffie chapters for free. And it's really short. It's like 5 hours.
Okay. I'm a little more okay with that. That doesn't bother me as much.
It's also fun, and it's difficult. It's, like, shockingly difficult, because Yuffie has a really weird gameplay style, but once you figure it out, it's
Yuffie's
fun.
A really like weird character, so...
She is a really weird character. Bonus points, the game calls you a creep if you hit on Yuffie, because she's canonically 16. Which is good. You should be hitting on Tifa. She's right there!
As, Aerith, if somebody who was spicy. Canonically 16 at the time that Final Fantasy VII came out, I picked Yuffie over Tifa every time. Now as an adult, obviously, inappropriate.
Did you go on your Gold Saucer date with Yuffie?
Yuffie was my girl. Like Yuffie was my girl.
Okay, you know what? Her the way she acts doesn't shock me that you're like, yeah, obviously the annoying ninja.
I also realized that I didn't realize this until recently in talking to my friend doing his show that with him experiencing it for the first time. I didn't realize she was an optional character in the first one.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I found her very early on and, you know, fell in love, so.
You're meant to find her, and she acts like an ass, and you could beat the entire game without getting her. All the cutscenes in the game do not feature Yuffie or Vincent, just in case you never grab them.
Yeah. Which, again, I'm a big Yuffie stan over here, so.
There might be some dialogue choices that in FF7 Rebirth that you should explore, but the game does make fun of you if you use them. All right, that's it for Rebirth. Sorry that took like 20
minutes. No, that, I mean,
fun game.
Big game. I know we have one more game to talk about. I have a quick honorable mention that we haven't been able to talk about just because so many things have been happening, and I really haven't been playing this game a lot recently, but I did want to talk about it for like 2 minutes.
Okay, go ahead.
The Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown.
Oh, yeah.
So we hit the peak, Josh. I just want to be sat in a dark room and have something shown to me and experience it for the first time, having absolutely no knowledge of it. So, lead up to the game coming out, obviously, I was deep in some books and holiday stuff. I hadn't been listening to a lot of game podcasts. I had no idea this game existed at all. And then I had a birthday. Mike was kind enough to be like, yo, I heard this game is pretty good and sounds like something you'd like. Can I give it to you for your birthday? And I said, cool. And I played it. And it's really fun. I haven't played it a lot because of the game we're going to talk about here in a second. But, you know, it is a 2D Metroidvania style game. It is not overly complex, but it just does everything you want a Metroidvania-style game to do very well. The artwork is phenomenal. The animations look great. The movement and the combat feel awesome. The two main things that I love about this game, too, is that it is, A, very customizable, and B, really helps you out with the things to come, like, to make the game more replayable and for you to come back to it. So, in the customization aspect, every single part of the difficulty you can customize. So you can have the, and it breaks it down to like the health of the enemies, the strength of the enemies, the timing of your counters, your health, all that stuff. So you can put everything on hard, but you're like, man, I suck at countering. So I'm going to make everything hard except the countering. I'm going to put it as low as I can because I just cannot get the timing down. I need it to be a little more forgiving for me. Like, it's very customizable to, A, either make sure that you're not getting frustrated experiencing the game, but also, like, challenging yourselves in the way, like, okay, I'm winning these fights pretty easily. I'm getting the timing down. I want the guys to be a little more harder, but, you know, if I have to get the timings more tight, I'm going to die. So it's really cool that, like, every single part of the game you can do. Like, it has some presets, but even in those presets, you can go and change one specific aspect of the game difficulty how you want it to, which I think is pretty cool. And then the other part is on the, like, exploration and Metroidvania side, you get tokens that you can use to take a snapshot of an area. So if you go somewhere and you find what you think is a secret or a path that you can't unlock yet, that you're like, oh, I see something here. I'm pretty sure that I'm going to need to get an item or something to come back to this. You can spend one of those tokens and take a screenshot of that. That then appears on your little mini map. Not only is the little icon, but then actually the area you were when you took that, and to say, okay, the next time I'm in here, or you know, hey, I get an item, I'm like, oh, you know what, this might be the thing. You can go on your mini map and be like, this is the one. Yeah, that's the one that I thought that I could use something like this. Now I can go back and do that. And I think that in terms of quality of life for a game, it's, you know, especially as an adult, especially as somebody who doesn't have a ton of time, or, you know, in my case right now, I have not played this game in a couple weeks because I've been down bad with another game, but I do want to go back to it. But when I go back, I'm not going to have any memory of this place. So to have little clues that I left myself on the mini map is really, really exciting. And just like one of those things, like, it seems like a no-brainer, and I wish and hope more Metroidvania games do in the future. Like, that is something I really enjoyed. But yeah, it was a good game.
Okay, all right.
But
do you think you're close to beating it?
No, no, no. I would say I'm probably 30, 40% of the way through. But
I gotta say, turning the Prince of Persia into a Metroidvania-style game, a search action game, if you will, didn't see that coming, but it's welcome.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But there's a reason I have not been playing this game. And Mike, I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to talk about before we talk about the reason why I'm not playing Prince of Persia, but...
No. We should talk about Helldivers Dose.
We need to talk about the Helldivers.
Yeah. I thought we did last time.
I mean, not
well,
to sound
not, talk about it.
Not to sound like a member of the Ministry of Truth, but we should always talk about Helldivers 2. it's the game. So it's
been
a game that this group has collectively played the most in the last
month.
It's true.
How do we feel? What do we think?
I played. Last week I got into a mech, and that only elevated whatever score I would have personally given the game. Like, ah yes, the bug situation is getting a little hairy. Be a shame, clack, if I call down a Daishi or a Mad Cat. You hop into the mech, yeah, it's got limited ammo, yeah, it's got limited rockets, but it has a dedicated kick button. Little bug getting out of line, boop! I love it.
That's great.
No, I think the main thing I want to talk about is the fact of the matter of the developers really leaning into the fan base and how they are developing and going about the game right now. Like, in the last week or so, they have hinted, and people have been seeing the presence of the flying bugs, but the developers are like, dude, everybody knows that bugs can't lie. Like, they're interacting with the community in a fun way, and the way that they are bringing new stuff into the game in a very in-world, in-canon way that everybody then has to go and do and earn and experience is really... I have not experienced anything like that in gaming before. Now, granted, you know, I haven't played as many, like, MMOs or whatnot, but I feel like the developers are in there interacting with people and really pushing everybody to collectively do something in a very engaging way, like, that is taking this game that is already pretty fun and filling a gap that has existed in games for the last few years in this, you know, quick in and out 4-player co-op experience, but elevating it into a way that I don't know that other studios could ever really emulate, because it just seems unique, and anything else following it will almost feel too, they're just trying to chase the Helldivers crowd.
Yeah.
It's probably
true. I think it does a good job of, I mean, I think a lot of our like larger group really bought into it, because the premise is, it's pretty straightforward. It's funny, which is hard to do in games. It's hard to be funny and not... This is not a bad thing. The Helldivers joke is very one note. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's doing one thing, but they have in a lot, like a lot of the writing, and they just do like one word is the joke. So they do a really good job of like playing it mostly serious, and but just doing just enough to like let you know they're in on it.
Yeah, it is. It is so all encompassing to an absurd degree, but also, if they didn't go all in like that, it wouldn't hit the same way. It just, like, right. It has to be everything, or else it, like, doesn't work.
It's just so funny to see, like, the go to the global map and see, like, the Helldivers KIA, and it's, like, in the billions now, and you're like, oh, no. So that's just like a lot of like the raw numbers of it are just the joke in and of themselves. When there was a mission that like all the players, like there was like a major order, which are like the way that the developers kind of steer people to different planets to like kind of like push major objectives and stuff. Mm-hmm. That was failed, and there was a. We described that a planet was lost, and that, like, unfortunately, the super citizens of this planet were forced to flee their sufficiently sized homes. And just, like, describing a home as sufficiently sized is just very funny.
It's so good.
I think the game, like, the gameplay itself is... there was some riffraff about, like, you know... playing solo on the highest difficulty is really hard. It's like, well, Dick, what do you think?
Yeah, that's the point. Like,
literally not the intent of the game.
Right. But I think
not to be like you're playing it wrong. Not to be Steve Jobs here, but you're playing it wrong, buddy. Like,
right. Like, but like it's approachable enough to just drop in. You don't need a lot of. Even the stuff you just start with initially is going to be somewhat successful.
Yeah, I mean, we had a friend who joined us for the first time. Most of us are in the upper teens and even early 20s. We played on a relatively medium challenging difficulty, and they were able to keep up with us for the most part and, like, did not feel like a hindrance. They also didn't feel like they were... dying that much more excessively than the rest of us. Like, literally, they even said, like, I feel good because everybody's dying as much as I am, so I don't feel like I'm letting everybody down or I'm behind everybody, because you're constantly dying. It's happening to everybody.
When a bug attacks someone and you happen to be holding the call down for the 500 kilogram bomb, you better have That's open so comms.
It's so good. Like,
yeah, you have to play Discord because you have to tell everybody to run.
Even when you tell them, like, hey, run from what? You'll see. Bang.
Right. It's like the and again, like, they do a good job of, like, the we are doing Starship Troopers, mm-hmm. Which is hard to do even close to as good as Starship Troopers. So it's like a dangerous space to be in, I think, just because you might blow it. But like, they let the game do a lot of the intentional comedy, or like the unintentional comedy. Because like, I was playing, and one of the guys on our team called down a supply drop next to me. There are these bugs that are like big rhino charging type monsters. And so you have to, like, get out of the way and, like, shoot at the weak spots as they go past. And I'm like, haha, I'm going to die, like, dolphin dive out of the way. And I dive. My head, like, when I dive onto the ground, is, like, right where the laser is of where the supply drop is going to come in. And just immediately, like,
bang,
beheads my character. Because when you die, your body, like, very comically gory, like, just completely eviscerates. Mm-hmm. So, like, my head just like pink mist. Just incredibly funny.
sometimes your character is nothing but a torso
yep.
just laying around yeah. on the ground.
What? Recently, I redeployed after heroically falling in battle, and I literally came out of my pod, spun around. There was a stalker behind me. One hit, done. Game over. Needed to be resupplied with more Helldivers immediately after that. Like, it yeah. just...
And the other really subtle jokes that are like, it's not called respawn, it's called resupply. It's like, the implication being you are not the same character that... Like, that character is dead forever.
Yeah.
You're mm-hmm. a new character now. Get in there, yep. soldier.
Well, even from the beginning, like, the fact that you have a destroyer, but there are these cryopods, and there are seemingly dozens of them in there. Like,
mm-hmm. like, it's like, yeah, my ship.
You are a
okay,
vessel,
boss,
and
whatever you say.
They will bring a new revolution down if the first one falls.
I was about to say earlier, like, you gotta hand it to those cyborgs on Mavlong Creek. They just wanted it more.
I'm gonna fight these bots. Damn, these bots got hands.
When you start playing the game against the Terminates, because it recommends you fight the Terminates first, and then it trains you to fight the Terminates, then you fight the robots, and you find out the hard way when you start playing the game, oh, the robots shoot back, and they're really accurate.
Yep. Yep.
Oh no, what is that robot with chainsaw for hands? Oh, he can run! Oh, he's fast!
It oh, was really funny, like, to be like, hey man, we're extracting, and then watch, like, Josh catch, like, a laser right to the face and just kills him. You're like, no! It's the gameplay has a lot of just, like, really great, like, it's really... I feel like it's deceptively simple, but it's really great at producing, like, these...
The
super fun, emergent kind yeah. of moments.
Emergent gameplay was... That concept was made with this game in mind. Yes, it's been around for a lot longer, but, like, the things that happen in this game, that is literally, like, what you think about when you think about emergent gameplay. Like,
I think, yeah, the hijinks factor could be higher.
Yeah.
Everybody who plays Helldivers has the same story as somebody else, but also a unique story to, like, everybody right. else. Like, I think that's the beauty of the game, is, like, you have a shared experience, but also something to be like, yo, you'll never believe what happened to me. And they're like, oh my god, that's nuts. You'll never believe what happened to me. And, you get that ongoing conversation of the absurd nature of the game, the kind of ongoing ARG of, like, the developers playing with people as folks who are playing the game see things that not the broader audience has gotten yet. It's phenomenal. It's unlike any other gaming experience
that right. like
I've been a part of.
The game has, yeah, like, because it is, like, a live service game, and it's interesting. We'll have to see, like, long term, but, like, it's interesting as, like, a lot of other live service games have, like, come and gone so quickly these days, because,
yeah.
like,
yeah.
it feels like it's just so hard to, like, jump in and to, like, find a foothold in this, like, space. So it's interesting that they've been able to do this, and, like, the approach is, like, that there is, like, somebody at the studio who made Helldivers who is, like, the, quote, game master, unquote, and, like, that's how they're, like, thinking about the live service aspect of it. So it's not just like, okay, well, the season pass is done, okay, like, there, even if you are just, like, doing missions on, like, the same planet, like, it's the same kind of loop, like, they're doing it, even just, like, that little narrative through line of it gives it, like, just changes the context a little bit, because even it's like Destiny, where you're like, I'm running the same strikes, but it's, like, because I got this gun now. But in Helldivers, it's like, because they're narratively different. It's like, oh, now we're building the bug towers. We're not just taking back the plant. We're building, like, the bug eradication towers that are definitely fine and not going to be a problem
they
at all.
They only impact bug
don't
life.
Worry about
literally
it.
No other human.
Right.
No other organic life is impacted by these. It's kind of amazing how... Actually, I'm pretty sure at one point I got an audio log where somebody said, it's kind of unbelievable that it only impacts Terminid Life. That's so amazing. And I'm like,
that's
there's no really, way that's true.
A nice piece of foreshadowing. This is going to date this podcast. Every time you launch or you activate one of those bug termination, like, gas pod thingies, you guys ever hear or just sit down and listen to, like, the weird and guttural screaming that happens after you do it?
No, I haven't. I'm going to have to.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, yelling that I suppose is the bugs.
You hope.
But also the ground starts shaking, and I'm like, all right, maybe. To quote Mike, surely this won't have negative implications.
Guys, what if the Terminator Eradication Towers are just big, deep launchers from the 60s?
What's a big, deep launcher?
DEET. You know, DEET. The old... Oh, the old.
Oh.
It's just DEET.
It's just DEET. We have this advanced technology. It's just DEET.
We went back. That's fun. We went back to the Super Earth archives, back from when we were just Earth. We went to this place called the United States of America from the 1950s.
And they're like, man, they were cooking.
Look at these motherfuckers spitting.
Literally just driving around and just like
advanced, the implication
spraying DEET all over the neighborhood.
One time Earth was not super, and then with the birth of managed democracy, which is again a very funny phrase of speed.
Yes.
It became Super Earth.
I like the game.
I think I like my last thing on this is what this game reminds me of. It weirdly enough, the movement in this game, it feels like Metal Gear Solid 5.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You posted that Twitter video of like.
Yeah. It feels a lot like Metal Gear Solid 5. And you know what? Don't tell me about Metal Gear Survive. No, don't count. The world needs the multiplayer tactical action espionage video game. We need the multiplayer one. I really just need 4-player Metal Gear Solid 5. That's what we need. Like it has to be like the missions. But with, the freedom of, like, oh, well, do you wait for the targets to get to the base and then infiltrate the base? Or do you go in loud? Do you try to get... Do you split up to get the targets, like, separately? Do you, like, let the guy... Do you sneak on and, like, put a bomb on the helicopter while they're touring the base so you can, like, observe... Like, spy on them, get all the intel, and then blow them up as they fly away? Or, like... Like being
should
able
I
to make all
should,
of those
yeah,
like little like.
Well, I had this thought too of like, okay, you know,
they gotta do it.
This game Come is on. Fun.
Somebody
and you know sometimes like we have a large group of friends. Having a 4-player game can sometimes be limiting, but like, you know, whatever. That is what it is. But there's a part of me that like hopes in a couple months, 6 months, a year, whatever. Like they do like an epic, like you know, I won't call it a raid, but like you have 2 fire teams dropping on to like a double or a triple size map, and they're doing, you know, missions simultaneously, but they have to converge for like one large final encounter, and like, you know, if the one fire team gets done first, they can go help with the other, but at the end they have to meet one giant objective at the end that all 8 people have to do at the same time. It combines all their stratagems and whatnot, and like, I don't know, just like, yeah, that may be too, but just like something to make it even bigger, right? Which
I was gonna say actually, like Metal Gear Solid V or 5, pick your poison. That does have a multiplayer component, and it's close to what you were describing.
Yeah, I've done some PvP matches there. It's fun. It's not what I'm talking about though. I want the multiplayer version of the single player game.
Okay, where you're just out in, like, Afghanistan or North Africa.
Right. Like, you have somebody who's, like, the sniper Overwatch, like, scout person. Mm-hmm. You have, like, the people trying to get in tactical. You have, like, reflect. Like, you just being able to, like...
Wait.
Spend, like,
also
an hour planning the mission before you actually hit the start button. And then going badly.
We've played that game together. That's Ghost Recon Wildlands.
No, but it has to be good. That's the final condition, is that Wildlands is a kind of bad game.
The jank was what kept that game going.
The jank and running on pure jingling.
Basically, yeah. Like, at least... Bless them, at least Helldivers 2 knows it's satire. I'm not sure how much of Ghost Recon Wildlands was satire. I'm leaning towards none of it. I'm leaning towards 0%.
God, that game is... That's got to be one of the most evil games up there. Nah.
Did you have to base in Colombia? Yes. Yes, we did. All right. Go off, Ubisoft. They've been in the news a lot recently. We don't have to get into it, but they've been in the news a lot recently. Their latest live service game is not doing hot. Skull and Bones. Have you guys heard of this?
Yeah, seems not good.
All right. Anything else? Any other games? Any other things?
Yes. No, I have a quick point I want to talk about here.
Yeah.
The Gamergate HD remake is out, guys. Did you hear about this?
Okay. I have opinions. They're really simple opinions. Really, really simple. And Mike, you want to give the synopsis of it?
Yes, I'd love to. So, long story short, there is a company that is a very small company and probably not prepared for the weight of the internet world to come crashing onto them. And as people probably try to dox their information with the intent of hoping somebody goes to harm them, which is, I think, probably... I haven't seen it myself, but I feel like that's a pretty safe assumption that is happening at some level. And I wish the people the best of luck, because you don't deserve this.
Yeah.
So, the worst people on the planet, gamers, have... Fear the mind virus that is woke, right? And somehow have assessed that this company that, is a small, occasional contractor on some games for writing support, believe that this company, above all other forces, amidst the woke cultural revolution that is being blasted into your brain right now by this very podcast, that it's all their fault. Sweet Baby Ink Games is the group, and gamers are bad, and they're gonna do what they're gonna do. I think it's kind of crazy that Steam and Discord are just letting these very hateful kind of enterprises just kind of spin up, because there's a Steam group dedicated to tracking these games and trying to review bomb them and spread discourse about them. And it's just kind of crazy that this is not just discussion here. These people are targeting, and they're just on Steam and Discord just hanging out. This is weird.
Yeah, and that's
it's not good.
That's one of those that I would... The hate, the abuse that organization is getting is unbelievable, and it is so, you put on your critical... Again, sometimes I wish I could be in that that mindset to have the smooth enough brain to, not have a single critical thought, because it sounds fucking...
It'd be so free.
Oh, my God, I'd be so free. But, you take one single critical thought, and consultants don't have... nearly that kind of power, at all. If they had that much power, they would be employees, and they would own the studios. But whatever.
Go ahead. Sorry.
From the Steam side of the community management of, do you play the long game and try and do some moderation, but let these groups kind of blow themselves out and then go back in 2 weeks when the heat has died down and just delete all of those reviews? Or do you swat them now and have the added fuel to the fire for these fucking losers
to say, look, we're being silenced. Look, the, you know, Gaben is in on it. Let's do it even more because we will not be silenced. Like,
I have a perspective.
Yes, yes. I mean, you've done community management, obviously, Ray. You've dealt with this a lot, so you can speak to that a little bit.
For groups like this, there's two things you have to do. They're uncomfortable, but we've done it before. One, you give them as little oxygen as possible. Like, the fact we're talking about them kind of helps, because most people listening to this podcast, like, don't know or care. Sweet Baby Incorporated, Inc., what have you, they do story consultation for a lot of different games. Like, the latest one mm-hmm. that, like, the, as Mike put, the worst people you know, you're like, oh, they ruined Suicide Squad, killed the Justice League. And I was like, no, I think that game was just kind of bad to start. I'm sorry, Rocksteady Games, or Rocksteady Studios, you made a game where you shoot kryptonite bullets at Superman. You made a boring video game. I'm sorry about your luck. Happens to the best of us. But they also gave a story consultation on Alan Wake 2, voted one of the best games of the year, 2023. Not just by Mike, but also, like, other
a lot of media outlets, like,
right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and, like, the angle that they were pushing, that, like, the heat on this was getting so much that, like, the studio came out to, like, Sam Lake and Remedy came out to say, like, because they're like, oh, the reason Saga is black is because of this consulting company. Like, they are the reason why everything is in the games that you like is bad, and we should, and this, the call to action is like, hey, we should do something about that. And the Remedy came out and was like, no, that's
yeah,
not,
that's a,
I mean,
that's a ridiculous thing. Also, the other game that they did consultation on is Marvel Spider-Man 2, which recently last month sold 10 million copies. So
this is so many people not understanding what consultants do.
Do not listen to previous podcasts about my thoughts on the writing in Spider-Man 2.
But like, it, they're not only do they have a fundamental understanding of like what consultants do, but they also have a fundamental understanding of like how games are made. Like, decisions like that are made so far in advance of some of those things. And yes, some of those things can get changed on the fly, or you know, decisions get made halfway through. But like, a lot of that is already done and storyboarded out and pre-done well in advance of any little influence that a small place like that, like, you know, putting on my TV lawyer hat for just a minute. Honestly, the biggest problem is the fact that they came out and like said that they purposefully make sure that they have a diverse group of, you know, people of color on the staff and don't have any white folks, which that just opens them up for employment law litigation. Like, that's a problem because, yeah. mm-hmm. you know, you can't be discriminating, which...
I want to get the point, too.
Yes.
Point one is... You don't give groups like this oxygen.
Yes.
Like, the more attention you give to them, the bigger they get. So, to the point of, well, we should ban the groups. Don't ban them. Don't ban them yet. What you do is you let them be on the most public site they can be, and you infiltrate them. Keep someone on the inside. Keep a community manager. Make an alt account. It's really easy. I'll show you how to do it myself. And then you just watch them. That's it. Because once you ban them, they didn't die. They just go to an underground place that you probably don't want to go to. And then you can't watch them as easily, or you can't infiltrate as easily. And once you cut off their oxygen supply, as in you stop talking about them, they do one of two things. They either radicalize more, which happens and is unfortunate, and it's really hard to stop that, or they get bored and go do something else. And that's honestly, that second one, that's what's
the most happen.
Yeah, because once you realize, like, hey, did you know that video games are made by, you know, obviously I'm like a black person myself. Did you know video games are just made by people, and people come in all different shapes and sizes? Most of the trans people I know in my life are because I've worked in game studios with them. I'm sorry to say, if you're like going for like unwokeifying video games,
I need
you
the
lost
Marcus.
That.
I need the Marcus Aurelius quote person to be the only person making my video games.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you want to like unwokeify, whatever the fuck that term means, video games,
bro,
video games are like literally the most progressive medium.
The MAGA crowd is gonna be so mad when they learn that trans people made Call of Duty. Like, oh my god,
it's a lost battle, and it's a constantly losing battle. You think the people that go to like will. Take what I do. You think people that go to school to make video games are going to like look at the Anti-Sweet Baby Inc. Corporation and like say that's where we need to go? No! They're gonna look at you, call you a bunch of incel losers, presume that you're a bunch of Caucasian boys that have never seen the touch of a woman or known it, and then move on in life and continue.
I do want to like a brief retort to like the don't give these groups oxygen. That works until, quote, at Elon Musk on X. Sweet Baby Inc. is an evil blight on the gaming industry. All they do is make games terrible and try to cancel people. They cannot go broke soon enough! Exclamation point. Unquote.
Yeah, and that's that. Just, that was going to be my like.
It's not
my. We're in a really. I mean, yes. We are at a good time in human history. We're also in a terrible time in human history because we just have these communication platforms. And, you know, there was an old adage that you hear a lot that, like, sunlight disinfects. And the more you bring attention to folks, the more that you, you know, bring them into the cold light of day, like, it makes them realize. But I think that's less true. I also think what you're saying, Ray, of, like, you don't give them oxygen. You don't feed the trolls. You let them kind of do their thing while you know do a little bit of shadow banning, and then you retroactively go and nuke stuff once they've kind of lost the steam, so you're not giving them that martyr complex in the time is good. But also, like, letting them continue on does real harm to people now. Like, there are human beings who work at that organization who are going to be the victims of a lot
of... They're going to have to move.
Yeah, they're going to be the victims of hate. They're going to be, they're going to be DDoxed. They're going to be potentially harassed and in fear of their physical well-being, especially when you have somebody like one of the richest people on the planet fucking going out and highlighting it. This is something I've spent a lot of time, you know, not that I have any say on how things go, just like, how do we deal with this unconstrained conversation environment to protect people in harm's way, but also not give the people who are doing the hate and the assault the martyr complex for them to just go and say, look, I was right all along. I have to do this even more now, and I need more people to help me with it. And, I mean, I don't think there's a right answer, but, I'm with you, Ray, because, like, that's kind of my original, but, the more it's like, but also, there are people who are actively experiencing harm, hate, and harassment now who can't wait for them to lose interest in this and move on to the next thing.
Well, here's the thing. Once there's actionable, incredible threats made to you, you can contact the FBI, and the FBI will just say, all right, we're just going to IP trace them, and then if it was an actionable, credible threat, like a SWAT or something like that, I don't know if that actually happened, but yeah, that throws you in prison for 3 years, like, instantly. Now, being doxxed, I've been doxxed while working at a game studio. It's scary for the first 5 minutes, most people, the vast majority of people, aren't going to do anything. I'm not trying to say that these experiences of people that are experiencing, like, harassment or doxing isn't scary. It is. It absolutely is. Hell, we've had bomb threats called on our studios.
We also,
those
we,
are fun.
We also do have to remember that, like, while you are black, you're still a man. And it is different being doxed and harassed as a man.
Oh, absolutely.
Than it is as a woman. Like, especially a black woman or a woman of color. Like, those are... Your experience is worse than Mike and mine. But, like, their experience is worse than yours when it comes to those kinds of things because the threat of violence is more real or the harassment is more intense. So, that is something we do need to keep in mind. There are a lot of women and women of color who are the victims of this who will experience these things even more acutely than, you know, you would or Mike and I would if we were in the games industry having something like this happen to us. So,
sure. And I'm not trying to reduce that
experience. No. I definitely see what you're saying of, like, for you, maybe, like, that first 5-10 minutes of, like, oh my god, somebody sent me a message with my address, like, that's probably terrifying and you get over it. But, like, for women who have been fearing assault, have experienced assault, like, for a long time, like, that is probably a more dread-inducing situation for a lot longer than somebody like you.
Sure. Again, not trying to reduce, but I am saying if you want to go ahead and what happens, how do we move past this? You gotta ignore it. Don't ignore the threats, but ignore them. But once you ban them, that's it. They're like, cool, we're gather on, like, I don't know, whatever the Stormfront replacement is. I'm being serious. That works for like a year or so. It actually kind of empowers them because they say they're after us or something like that.
Yeah.
And now that, like, dumbass Musk has said his piece, like, well, one, who gives a shit about what he says about video games? Like, I guess he's just a mouthpiece, is all. Or who gives
the biggest mouthpiece, unfortunately, on, like, the place where everybody does discourse, which is
and he's he's
something the first Gamergate did not have.
And it is something that when you have somebody as rich and powerful as...
Didn't have the owner of Twitter.
When you have the owner of Twitter, one of the richest one of the richest men on the planet...
My mans.
Weighing in and confirming your suspicion or your belief, like, that puts a whole other... weight behind what you're doing. Like, I'm not, you know, we're not gonna go holy war here, but, like, you feel empowered in a way, like, Elon fucking gave me my marching orders. He knows what we're out here fucking keyboard worrying about.
Elon Al-Kaif.
Yeah, Elon Al-Kaif. Mua X. Like, it's just...
This is one of those things, so if I'm being, like,
you know, he's thinking that to himself.
100%.
Well, Grimes compared her son, whose name I can't pronounce purposely. She compared her son to Paul and said she cried during the entirety of Dune 2 because she feels her son is going to go through the same things. It's like, man, no wonder Elon dated you. No wonder you got pregnant by Elon.
So does that mean? Does that mean Elon is the Duke and he's about to get got? Like, because I'm okay with that. Like.
Dude, well, Elon wishes he was Duke Leto Atreides. He's, you know, Baron Harkonnen if he's anything. my ending point is I can see in like 3 months.
Why Twitter?
We're not talking about this. Because once you just scratch the surface of like, hey, Sweet Baby Incorporated, they've worked on many games. They've done story consultation for many games. It becomes a who cares type of thing. Now, again, not reducing anyone's experiences, but this will go away. Like, the first Gamergate had more legs to stand on in a weird kind of effed up way than this does. This is just... they're promoting the woke agenda. What does that mean to you? Well, like, doesn't... I think
maybe
we talked about this pre-pod.
The idea
this means
of playing
nothing.
A video game instead of, I don't know, going to the bathhouse is the woke agenda. So
going to the bathhouse. Oh, my goodness.
That's what these people want, right?
The Roman bathhouses.
Right. The woke is...
Give me my vomitorium. I need to eat so much that I puke into a tub with my car.
Listen, Romans didn't use toilet paper. They shared a sponge that all went into the same bucket. It was a sponge with a stick on it. That's all I want to say. Like, they didn't have everything down.
Sometimes it is a miracle that humans as a species got as far as we did.
Josh, yeah. I'm done. Would you like to use my sponge? I'm so sorry.
A real dog that caught the car kind of situation. You know, just like in the grand scheme of things, like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. Fire. Hey, this thing's not bad.
Josh, where can people learn more about the sponge?
One final piece on here. The only solution to this is the device.
The device.
The contraption.
The device. The contraption. The gizmo.
Oh my god.
Josh.
If you want to find all of our analysis on the sponge and the device, you can follow us at unscriptedgaming.com. There you'll find links to all of our socials and all of our platforms all over. We're on Facebook at Unscripted Game Podcast.
That's how they got Caesar.
That's how they got him with the sponge! With the communal sponge!
We're on device.
X at unscript_gaming. We're soundcloud.com/unscripted-gaming. You can get our audio there. You can get it on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, anywhere where you can listen to us. We're on YouTube, Unscripted Gaming 2.0. Thank you for listening to Unscripted Gaming. My name is Josh.
My name is Sponge.
My name is Mike. Et tu, Brute, as I am shot by the Shinzo Abe device.
Peace.
The doohickey.
Good night.